It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Well, you sound pretty good. Adam is away, but not at a soccer game this time. He's sunning himself on the top of a mountain in North Carolina, where I assume it's pretty nice up there, right?
Well, it has been up until today. It's pretty overcast and rainy, but it's...
Yeah, we had it.
Yeah. Can you not
anyway,
hear me now?
Adam will be here on and off from the looks of things, so we'll take it from here. I don't know what's going on with him, but he probably had a bad connection because of where he is. Anyway, welcome, everybody. For all the regulars who are always with us for the past 8 years, thanks for always being there. You're, of course, the reason that we pick up and change things every week, trying to make it real and raw. There is not very much in the world that I find more boring than canned financial radio, because everything is old by the time you're hearing it. So we try to come in here every week and keep you up to date. I communicate once a year with an old friend in Wisconsin who used to work for me. And she was born in some country far, far away over the pond and has an accent that proves it. But over there, they celebrate something called Boxing Day, which I didn't know before I knew her. And she, many years ago, I'm talking a lot of years ago here, she taught me what Boxing Day is. So every 26th of December, I drop her a little email and say, I'm thinking about you because of Boxing Day again. And she wrote me back, and we did what we usually do. And I just casually mentioned to her that she should call in and say hello, this being the last day of the year. And we're trying, although we're failing at this point. So we'll chat with her if we get a moment. So the market this week. Okay, that's the end of that discussion. No, I wish it were. We tried, but we failed again. The market tried again this week to do something good and positive, and it sputtered as it has been doing so much lately that we just didn't get anything going at all and wound up being down for the week again. Although, on a brighter side, we were up for the quarter. The Dow was up 15.4, and the S&P was up 7.1. The NASDAQ got hammered again. NASDAQ's had a really, really uncomfortable year, to say the least. That's the bad news. The good news is I think we're going to go into the new year seeing some valuations that are a little more realistic on a lot of things, especially in the NASDAQ. The statistics, which you can not rely on necessarily, but the statistics say that this should be a really good year in the market. And I'm not going to make the promise, but let's just go on that. I think things are bad. I do think we're in a recession. I have thought that most of the year. We're probably still there. And if anything, I'd say it's closer to over than it is to the beginning. And if we all fail to panic and sell everything we own, we'll probably come out of this next year looking pretty fair again. We can hope. Meanwhile, there are a lot of interesting things that are going on day to day. There's a lot of stupidity out there. I've highlighted a bunch of that. And for any of you who want to feel a little bit better about what your portfolios did this year, I got a couple of big losers, and one of them is kind of the ultimate in irony. It's called Osprey Solana Trust, and it lost 93% this year. Now, it is a little tracking ETF sort of thing that is supposed to track one of the cryptos that we are so negative on. And the ironic part of all of this is that the crypto is called SOL, and the symbol for it is SOL, which, if you get my gist, is exactly where you were if you invested in that. So a little irony. So if you own any SOL, you are definitely SOL. More stupidity before we get into anything else. What does it say about a Congress who, in trying to, quote, help get things done, passes a decent law, and I think the secure part of the big budget law was pretty decent, but they do it in a manner so we get no time, no planning opportunities, and virtually no information. They still won't release a lot of what went on in there, but it will help some of us, you know, the particular age group born in 1950 or later, where we're going to get some help with our RMDs from the IRAs and so on, and that has all passed. But how stupid is it when it has passed the Senate, it has passed the House, and it's going to the president's desk? And it's 4,155 pages long. It is so long and so incomplete. Even though it has passed and no one's actually read it, they want to send it to the president's desk because it absolutely positively has to be signed on Saturday or the government shuts down. But where is he? He's off in his little private toy called Air Force One to St. Croix. But since the document wasn't printed yet, the document took a separate plane to St. Croix so that he could sit down and sign it. Now, if I remember right, there's something called an electric pen that was used by Obama somewhere else, and it would have been probably a cost-saving thing. Did I say probably? It would have been very nice of them to just do things right. It'll never change, and I'll be a little more optimistic right after a short break. We'll be right back. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee. As usual, we do have a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Every year, I like to go back to an old saying that I certainly can't prove, but I test the theory frequently, that says, all of the money made in the market is made in the best 7 days. And the best 7 days are unpickable, if I might. That theory also says, corollary one, says that if you could miss the worst 10 or 7 days in the market, that you would have returns far, far greater. And, of course, that is understandably true. The problem is when you try to time the market, you fail. There is no way that people are going to do anything but fail trying. It can make some strategic moves and then some tactical moves within the strategies, and you will wind up with some hopefully improved slightly results. But if you try very hard, you'll lose. So here's the stats. The Dow was down 9.5% for the year. If you missed the worst 7 days, if you missed the best 7 days, you would be down 27%. What would your return be for the year on the Dow if you could have just missed the worst 7 days? It's plus or minus and whatever number of percent that we're looking for. There are some times that things are so dumb that I cannot overlook them. And one of them happened on MSNBC this year. Person who holds himself out to be a financial guru and advisor. His name is Anand Giriharadas, which is a mouthful in itself. He says that the existence of billionaires is inconsistent with democracy. Think about that. Inconsistent with democracy. So I would like to remind him, not that I think he'll ever hear this, but just in case, it is not inconsistent with capitalism, it is not inconsistent with a representative republic, and it is not inconsistent with good old-fashioned common sense. I got a lot more of them, but they're everywhere, absolutely everywhere. All right, remember back to, two, 3 months ago, something like that, and we had a listener that asked us, why don't you do an occasional book review on a money book? And we said, okay, we'll do that. And the first thing that I brought up was The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is the very long and very detailed treatise of how the Federal Reserve took place back in 1912 and 1913. And most of you who've listened to me for a long time know that I wish it had never happened. I wish it would go away. And wishing doesn't get you anywhere. That's a problem. But I still recommend that everyone read it. But then I went on and I pre-assigned a book to anybody who cared to read it. And I'm not ready to cover that yet. It's very long also. But Ayn Rand had a 1950s book called Atlas Shrugged. I'm sure a lot of you have read it. It is really worthwhile doing. It'll teach you a lot about a lot of things that are going to sound very, very much too current, I guess. It's almost as if somebody sat down and took a look at the world today and wrote a book about it, hypothetical. It was a great, she had a lot of foresight. But I do want to do another one. A lot of you probably have encountered along the way, if you studied any economics, because this is basically the most fundamental of economic books ever written. It was written in 1776 by a man named Adam Smith. And I don't want anybody to confuse Adam Smith with the Adam Smith that's in the Congress right now, because there have never been two more diametrically opposed people. But Adam Smith wrote a treatise called The Wealth of Nations, and it starts basically right down to, it isn't cavemen, but bare subsistence living. It goes through virtually every topic that you can think of about economics and trade and the interaction of different countries and so on and so forth. Now, you might be a little bit surprised. The first thing I'm going to tell you is don't even think about reading it. Just do not. It will take you months and months and months. It's written in kind of old-fashioned English, and it is very tedious. Now, I had read it before, and I went through it sort of quickly, and it reminded me what a wonderful book it is. But I want to find something that we can review that will encompass that all the concepts and all of the good things that happen inside the book. But I found it strange that I found myself thinking after the first week or so of rereading it, I don't want anybody to go out and pick up this book and read it because of me, because they'll resent me forever. So I will find something else. But meanwhile, if you want to really look into any serious money topic, you can't do much better than Milton Friedman, who has written a series of books. One of them is called Money Mischief. That was particularly good. But if you can find anything by Friedman, if you're really serious about studying and learning some economics about money, that one's good. Then if you want to move on to investing, there are several of those that are sort of primary. And I'm going to do a little more reading between now and next week and come up with what I would rank as a good order to do them in. All right. Another interesting thing here. Those of you who go back a few years, like as far back as the 70s, and have listened to investing media and have watched things and followed the market. There's a fellow that was very famous back in the 70s. In fact, he made himself very famous in the 70s and 80s because he was so darn successful. His name was Peter Lynch, and he's kind of a memorable-looking character, so that was easy. But he ran the Fidelity Magellan Fund, and he ran it well. He had a couple of interesting ideas, like he'd wait for his wife to come home from shopping and he'd see what she bought and then he'd ask her questions about it. And there was one day in particular that stood out in his story. She came home with this little white egg that she'd picked up at point of purchase display in a store and broke it open, and inside were pantyhose. So he said, "What is it?" And she said, "Well, I don't know for sure, but it was there and I bought one." So he said, "Well, would you try them out and let me know what you want, what you think?" And she said, "Fine," and did. And when she came back to report to him, it was all positive. So he went to the stores and looked at their displays and he liked that. So he contacted the Haynes Company, which manufactured these things. And the Haynes Company was successful, and they were wanting to get more successful. So they decided they were going to build a huge new factory to make legs, as it was called. So Peter drummed up a bunch of money from Fidelity and built them a factory and sold, leased and sold it back to them and made a boatload of money. And right after the break, I want to read you a quote from him that I think is absolutely as timeless as anything could be. Got to take a short break. I'll be right back. Hopefully things will get better. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour, experimental version. We're going to now ask Adam to come on while we're on air and see if perhaps we can hear him.
I'm here. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
You're loud and clear.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Joining my own show.
Yeah, there you go. You should get this one for half price. What can I say? All right, Dorothy, if you're out there, you can call back now, and there's a half of a chance, at least, maybe two-thirds, that we'll be able to talk to you. So if you're listening, try one more time.
Can you hear me now?
Tom and I can actually communicate now without him coming in here, too. All right, Adam, we didn't really do much about a market wrap, and I know you probably have some things you would like to talk about, so let's insert that here after I give out the trivia question one more time. If you missed the best 7 days of this year, you would have been down in the Dow 27% versus only 9.5% if you're in. But how much better would it have been if you could miss the worst 7 days this year? Which, of course, you can't. So it's hypothetical, but it's trying to show a point here about market timing. All right, Adam, take it away.
Yeah, I heard your version of the market wrap. You touched on a lot of the points that I wanted to. 2022 ended in the most 2022 ways of all, on a down day. That did see some strong buying into the close. The one thing that you didn't talk about was the chart on the Dow. It's still sitting on that 50-day moving average. And so that's a good sign that it didn't fall below. No. It didn't have a – so we're still sitting there with the potential for the market to continue to go up and sort of build on that fourth quarter momentum. And what I found really weird was how bad the fourth quarter felt as an investor when in reality it was a pretty good quarter. The Dow was up over 14%, the S&P something like 8%, but it just felt awful. So it's just one of those quarters where, and I think it just capped off that such a bad year that even if it had been even a little bit better, it wouldn't have felt that great. Definitely looking forward to 2023. Hopefully, get a change of pace and see some different different market dynamics than we did in 2022. Just such an awful year across the board. There was only a few asset classes that I could even find that had gains in 2022 outside of the energy sector and a very slight gain on the utility sector, I believe. There just wasn't much else out there that did any good. Commodities to some degree, but the things that were down really big, and you just couldn't avoid losses. If you had any kind of diversified portfolio, it didn't help you at all.
Yeah, the worst part of that whole thing was the performance in the bond market, which generally saves us on a bad equity market year. It just contributed.
Yeah, QQQ and TLT should not move in the same direction at the same time. It doesn't make any sense.
Twin brothers.
Yeah, they were this year. Just really a terrible year. I don't know what else to say about it. It was really bad.
So you got a forecast?
Nope, no idea what's going to happen. There's so much conflicting data out there, and that sort of, I think, is the summary of 2022, is the conflicting data. But when the market has behaved like this in the past, there are many examples that you could pinpoint that would say generally the next year is better. But there's also a few examples that the next year isn't that great. So it's really tough to predict where we're going in the short term. Now, in the long term, I think we get through this recession and we see a nice rebound. But I'm talking about a year plus before I would be willing to forecast that.
Yeah, and I would also forecast that a move, maybe not a jump or dive in, but a move back toward a balanced portfolio, the proverbial 60-40 and the permutations thereof, I would think that's going to start paying better returns. The thing that I base that on is the speed of the interest rate increases at the Fed has been reduced, and it's got to come pretty close to being over. And that should allow the bond market to start making a recovery. When will that happen exactly? I don't know. The Fed is just so stubborn about this. When they make a mistake, they fix it by making another one. And
yeah, there's nothing like doubling down on bad policy.
No, really. And they can flop 180 on the policy and go from one bad policy to the opposite bad policy because their timing is always off. And they're so afraid to admit it.
One prediction I will make is that the Fed will be cutting rates long before they predict they will be cutting rates.
Oh, I'd go along with that, dude. Well, you were the one that said throughout the prior years that when the Fed was saying there's not going to be any increases in 2022, you were shaking your head the whole year saying, you can't say that. It's stupid to say it. Second, it's not going to work. And third, it's not going to be true. So what do they do now? They start telling us that we're going to 5.5% or 6% or whatever like that. Why don't you just have a meeting and announce something and go away? Or if you only want to do one of those, just go away.
Another interesting note on inflation, the CPI data generally tracks the prices paid indexes really, really closely. I mean, in fact, they move almost in lockstep. Right now is about the biggest divergence I've ever seen between the two, those three numbers, the mm-hmm. CPI, the prices paid, and the and there's another prices paid index that is slightly different, but they all move pretty much generally exactly the same. And if you look at the slope of them right now, they're all sloping down at the same pace, but the gap between CPI, which is up around 7%, and the other two prices paid indexes, which are down around 3% and 4%, is the biggest divergence I've ever seen. So if the CPI just goes back to what it normally does and tracks those other two almost 100%, we should be seeing 3% to 4% inflation before too long.
Yep, I'm kind of right on your side on all of that. All right, one more time, I'm going to ask Dorothy. We really wanted to make this conversation happen. We're having a break in 3 minutes, and we'll be back about 3 or 4 minutes after that. And if you can, we'd try one more time if you're still willing to do it. I apologize for the things that have been going poorly today. I hope it's not an omen. I think it's just another symptom that 2022 just stinks.
Why not end 2022 the same way that it started, just on a really bad note?
Yeah. One of my favorite writers that I follow on the internet quite often is Derek Hunter, writes for the Town Hall people. And I saw his this morning, and I just had to laugh out loud. The title of his piece for right now is 2022 Sucks. That was it.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, you can say a lot in very few words if you pick the right ones. And I was listening to Angela on the prior show, too, and she was expressing the exact same sentiment.
I'm not surprised. I think that most of our listeners right now would agree. And if you disagree, call in and tell us why, because we would love to hear some optimistic talk.
We would, wouldn't we? Okay, I want to follow up on the Peter Lynch comment. This is something that he just has kind of a way of putting things that makes you think a little bit. And this is all a quote. Some event will come out of left field and the market will go down, or the market will go up. Volatility will occur. Markets will continue to have these ups and downs. Basic corporate profits have grown about 8% a year historically. So, corporate profits double about every 9 years. The stock market ought to double about every 9 years. The next 500 points, the next 600 points, I don't know which way they'll go. So, the market ought to double in the next 8 or 9 years. They'll double again in 8 or 9 years after that. Because profits go up about 8% a year, stocks will follow. That's all there is to it. Now, that may sound a little oversimplified until you go back to the day that he wrote that and see what the market is, and you would be absolutely amazed how accurate that was. Again, the theory, the lesson, whatever, is that it is really, really difficult to time the market. There's another old saying that I've seen over many years of doing what we're doing that says investors underperform their own assets. What does that mean? That means that if they would have purchased their assets and held them longer without trying to chase profits or time the market to sell high and buy low, they would have done better overall. I know it's hard. The hardest days, you've heard me say this a lot, the hardest days Adam and I have are when things are going really rocky in the market and we look at each other and say, can't explain it, don't do anything. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yay! Sounds so good when it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I never did get an answer because it broke off, but is it nice up there?
Oh, it is actually, has been amazing, but it's rainy and overcast today. So, once again, just ending 2022 on the appropriate weather.
Yeah, it kind of makes you want to just look up and shout at the top of your lungs, don't rub it in.
2022 stinks.
Exactly. See, everybody agrees. Yeah, it was especially bad if you were running some big, strange company like SBF was doing. anybody who wasn't following the whole, I can't remember his name now, but anybody who has been following it knows that things were not really aligning for him in 2022 either. So this morning I'm perusing through the multiple places I go before the show, and one of them said the Bahamian authorities had impounded $3.5 billion of the FTX monies. I guess that's the name of it, and they were preserving it for obviously the people who got shafted. And that's not the story. That's just the setup for the story. The real story was fabulous. His lawyers said in court that he didn't think the Bahamian authorities could be trusted with large sums of money.
But he could, of course.
Don't you love it? You can't make this stuff up, people. Otherwise, I'd try. That reminds me. You still there, Adam?
I am, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. That reminds me of one that you don't remember. You weren't around. Actually, I didn't remember it either, but I was around. Who's ever heard of the great salad oil scandal of the 1960s? This, for some reason, when I read this story, it just reminded me of SBF so much I could hardly stand it. Way back when, American Express had a division that was, they were all set up for warehousing, that kind of thing. And one of the things they got involved with a fellow named Tino DeAngelis, was a commodities trader and broker. He decided he was going to accumulate large quantities of salad oil and then use them for loans so that he could invest in other things, which pretty much turned out to be sort of a Ponzi thing when once upon a time, the people who checked on these things for American Express would go, you ever been to a gas station when they were staking the tanks? You know, the little plates on the top. The way you find out how much gas you got graduated sticks that you put down to the bottom and come up, and you can read where the gasoline line is on the stick, and it'll tell you exactly how many gallons are left in there. Well, along the way, as this guy was building and building and building, they were staking the tanks, and everything looked fine. But they forgot something, and that something was pretty simple. Oil and water don't mix. And what DeAngelis had done was fill most of the tank with water and then pile some gallons of oil on top of it so it showed the right place on the stake, but it was really water. And he kind of had a Ponzi scheme break apart. And just the more you read about SBF, this guy, he tried to come across as an innocent to which some bad things happen. And everybody that talks, and they're really talking now because they're being threatened with some really long jail time, he knew all about it. He was absolutely leading it. And he is now out on, this is another thing that bothers me, on a supposed bail of $250 million. But what did they really put up against that? Collateral is his parents' $4 million house in California. So you can put down the deed to a $4 million house and bail yourself out of a $250 million bail. Come on, people. These are the things that drive me nuts.
Is that through a bail bondsman or a company?
I don't have any idea. It had to be right from the county or state or whatever it was. No intermediate party could handle that. And better yet, no bail bondsman with a quarter of a brain, and I've never met a stupid one, nobody would touch that with a 10-foot pole. So here he is living the life of Riley right now, but not forever. Not going to happen. And it will be a very, very fine day when he picks up on the Bernie Madoff cell, which has been vacated for a while now. So we'll see. No way. You know, 2022 being what it was, how about one more stupidity thing? Everybody in the mood for that? We have an IRS that is already out of control. Everybody knows that. We have an administration that's already out of control. We have a whole bunch of stupid senators and congressmen that are out of control. And they put together this proposal that is now currently the law of the land. Whether the House can change it next year, I do not know. But IRS feels that over a 10-year period, they have lost out on $7 billion of tax collection because some people don't report all of their income. $7 billion over 10 years. So Congress set out to fix it. And fix it they did. They just allocated $80 billion to the IRS to hire 87,000 new IRS agents so that they can collect that whole $7 billion. Do the math on that, anybody?
Yeah, that doesn't add up. And not only that, but it just, it's who are they going after? They always say it's the wealthy, but I guarantee you that aren't enough. There isn't that many super wealthy people in the entire country. So it just doesn't add up. None of it adds up.
Well, add this little codicil onto it then. IRS promises that no money will be spent auditing people who make under $400,000 a year. Now, add this. We got layers here, and there's an onion so thick in here. This one you'll really like. They passed a rule that said Venmo, PayPal, all those clearing houses for payments of sorts. If anybody who collects more than $600 a year has to get a 1099. Now, you have to show, because you know they won't get it right, you have to show if it's actually something that you earned on a gig or something like that, or if you were just paying somebody back for your hockey tickets or whatever it was. Every person who did at least $600 worth of business with these places was going to get a 1099, and that person and their CPAs are going to have to worry about how to report it.
But and with the IRS, the burden of proof is always on the taxpayer. So
yep.
If they accuse you of it and you don't have proof, you're going to lose.
Yep. So what happened? This was one of the ways IRS was going to get that without, quote, the auditing the smaller people. By the way, those limits do exist today. I think they're $20,000 a year or 200 transactions. They still have to get them. But they're going to clamp down now and try to collect the money. So what did they do at the last minute this year? They decided they weren't going to enforce that law for this year, and we'll try it again next year. So they put a bunch of money and an enforcement mechanism in place and then looked the other way and didn't do it. And these, as I say, are the things that drive me nuts. And I'm not getting any younger, people, and I probably am not getting any more tolerant. Okay. Got anything else you want to say before I do something useful for a change?
I did read recently that Forbes ranked the cities in Florida by which ones were the best places to live, and our own Jacksonville placed number 2 on that list, right behind Tampa. And I can tell you, I've lived in Tampa and I've lived in Jacksonville, and Jacksonville is by far superior.
They got it wrong. Just wrong.
They got it wrong, right. We have 2 interesting notes. Our median income is $55,531, and the median home price is $429,000
in Jacksonville. Boy. All right. Well, if you missed out on the worst 7 days, you would have made 10.6% on the Dow this year. But the point is there. If you can figure out what those are in advance, please memorize my phone number because I'd love to listen in. But don't try it. It doesn't work. That's the motto for today. Now, we will be back next year. We have one more month to go to finish our 8th year doing this show. And we'll start it out next Saturday, same time, same place, and hopefully with a bunch of the same listeners. So we love you all. Have a good new year. This is the Banway Financial Hour.